This is the Let's Get Real Estate Show with your host, Danielle Chason.
Full-time investor, strategic consultant, motivational coach, sought-after speaker,
and host of your number one real estate investing show, Let's Get Real Estate,
where real people are doing real estate.
Hey guys, this is Sean DeMartel on the Let's Get Real Estate podcast with Danielle Chason. This was an amazing episode. I really hope you guys get a ton of value from this. I tell you all about my story, how I got started as a blue-collar, average, middle-class guy in Louisville, Kentucky, and built my portfolio to over 300 multifamily units. The journey wasn't easy. We talk about all my struggles, the same struggles you'll probably face and how you can overcome them. I tell you the blueprint that I followed and how you can follow it too, and some of my best practices and best advice I could possibly give you if you want to follow my path. I really hope you guys enjoy this episode, and a huge thank you to Danielle and her team for even giving me this opportunity to share my story with you guys.
Hey everybody, it's Danielle Chason here, and we are back with the Let's Get Real Estate podcast, where I bring to you real people doing real estate. And today, we got Sean DeMartel in the house. Woo woo! Hey Sean.
What's up, Danielle? Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to come on your show. This is awesome.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to have you because I'm always, always, always curious what's happening in the States. And I don't know if you're aware, but we have an influx of Canadian investors and we have an influx of Canadian investors who are just going down to the States and investing and wanting, because I mean, you guys have so many more opportunities there and so many more different markets. That investors are really going down there. So I'm super excited to hear what's going on with you with California, what you're doing in California and your North Carolina properties and all kinds of stuff. So I'm excited to get started. So thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get started too. I've been hearing a lot about this Canada stuff because I hear that the real estate prices are getting really nuts up there and way harder to get some profitable real estate investments. So happy to bring it down south down here to San Diego and everywhere else I'm investing. It's also warmer here.
Don't even talk to me about that because we are in the dead of winter right now. It's terrible. But you know what? We're used to it. We acclimate to it. It makes us tough, right? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So you know what? The real estate prices here really have been going up. I don't know if you've heard, but our market has cooled. I know it's cooled a little bit for you guys as well. But still very expensive.
Yeah, crazy. Like, wouldn't the average home price like above 1.2 mil or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's too much. Wild. It's hard for people to really afford that. So, having said that though, let's introduce you to the audience so that they know who we're talking with today, because seeing as you're in the American market, there's a lot of my audience that may not have heard of you. And so if you want to give a little background story on who's Sean, what your former life was before you got into real estate, because you just started this in 2018. And for those of you who don't know, Sean has 300 plus units in multifamily space. It is absolutely tremendous what he's been able to accomplish in 5 years. And that's what we want to highlight, that, you know what, these things can happen. So I just want you to maybe share who you were before, just as an average guy, still an average guy, just own lots of properties, right?
Let's do it. So I'm going to start from the beginning and go through the quick version. And I started out just like everybody else. I'm a normal middle-class guy. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, or as they pronounce it there, Louisville. and I grew up there, went to high school there, went to college, you know, growing up, went to, you know, public schools. I actually shared a bedroom with my brother until he went off to college. We literally shared a bunk bed until he left for college. We were both in high school together. So did not have a lot of money growing up. I was in college, University of Louisville, and I had switched my major twice. I was working full-time to support myself because my parents couldn't afford to put me through college. I was working full-time at Cracker Barrel, by the way. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but
absolutely.
Amazing breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. And at the same time, I had also taken out a lot of student loans, which were really freaking me out because I knew I was going to have to start paying those when I got out. I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with that. And I was eventually introduced. One of my mom's girlfriends that was married to an air traffic controller. He was like, "Look, man, this is a great job. It pays well, and you should come check it out." Took me to the air traffic control tower, and everybody in the control tower was either ex Navy or ex Air Force air traffic controllers. Basically, if you've got experience in the military doing air traffic control, it's almost a lock that you can get hired by the Federal Aviation Administration to work. Right. I was sold, talked to a Navy recruiter. They were like, dude, we'll pay off your student loans for you and get you the experience you want, blah, blah, blah. And that's all I needed to hear. I joined up. The plan was to get my experience. I had to serve at least 5 years and then apply to be an FAA or traffic controller to get my dream job. And long story short, all of that came to pass. I got my first duty station, and only duty station was right here in San Diego, California. Naturally, once I got here, I didn't want to leave. I had served my 5 years as an air traffic controller, applied for the FAA, and my dream was to work here in San Diego, California. And sure enough, that's where they hired me to work. And I worked controlling basically all of Orange County's approaches and departure from a radar room here in San Diego, California. And high stress job, a lot of work. You could read on the news all the time that there's a shortage of air traffic controllers and they can force you to work mandatory overtime. So typically I was working 6 day work weeks and my only days off were usually Tuesday. Technically I was off Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I almost always worked on Wednesdays and I would work, all three shifts. On Sundays, I would work 5:30 in the morning to 1:30 PM. Go home, try to get some rest, and be back at work at 10 p.m. and work the graveyard shift until 6 a.m. every Sunday. So, wow. Long story short, I was making good money, good six-figure income, grinding my butt off. And after about 5-6 years, I started thinking to myself, like, okay, I don't want to do this all the way until retirement. And a buddy of mine said, dude, you should check out the Bigger Pockets podcast, like learn about real estate investing. I really think you should give it a shot. Sure enough, I did that. And I was hearing all of these people on the podcast, you know, PE teachers, single moms, people that have backgrounds like mine, just everyday blue collar Americans that were building these crazy portfolios and able to quit their job. And I heard that and I was like, no freaking way. This is amazing. Like if a PE teacher can do this and I'm definitely making more money than a PE teacher, I have no excuse. I'm single. I don't have kids running around. So I was talking about this with some other air traffic control buddies of mine, and we're starting to get into it. We're studying. One day we decided to put all of our money together, and I swear to you, all three of us liquidated our 401ks. We got a couple other guys to pitch in as well, and we bought a 32-unit apartment complex. And that was in Indianapolis, out of state. That was my very first real estate investment. I'd never even owned my own home.
Wow.
So that was my first real estate transaction. Fast forward, I can do the rest of it real quick. We started a podcast, started on a real estate meetup, did everything in the book that they said you should do. Eventually got a mentor, personal mentor, and the rest is history. Our mentor led us through the way on our first syndications, did two big deals with us. Since then, I own multiple single family homes, Airbnbs, over 300 multifamily units, sold that first apartment last year, and we were off to the races.
That's crazy. And so the bulk of your portfolio now is in North Carolina, right?
The bulk of the portfolio is in North Carolina. The reason for that is where my mentor grew his business. He owns over 8,000 apartment units in his career, vertically integrated with his own property management company. So it was the natural place for us to go and try and acquire a property and have him hold our hands through the process. So his property management company manages our assets, and we learn directly from him through those. And to this day, we still own those assets.
Nice. So I know everybody's thinking right now, who was your mentor? Are you allowed to share?
Tony and John Azar. They're very prominent in the Southeast. North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia is where they own the vast majority of their portfolio. I met them from my podcast. Like, you know, I'm sure people listening to this and have listened to other podcasts wonder, like, how do these people get so connected? Do everything that people are recommending, the podcasts, the meetups. This is where you meet these kind of people. And sure enough, that's where we met our mentor.
Yeah, that's something I talk a lot about on this podcast because I built my business on networking. And people just say networking when they think of it. I think they just think of you going out and hanging out with people. But there's a purpose behind it. It's you're shaking the hands with your potential next partner, your potential next mentor, your potential next capital partner even. Maybe the person you're talking to has the capital but not the time, right? And so I'm always saying networking is a marketing strategy. It's not just going out and hanging out and learning, but you're also building your business and your network. And that's what you call on when you need to grow, right?
100%. And like the good thing about it is it's free. I mean, like, if there's anything you're going to do, if you want to hustle, it's an easy thing to do. Sure, it might cost a little bit of money to buy some food or a drink at one of these things, but it's cheap. It's about as cheap as marketing gets or networking gets. And you just never know. Like, there's nothing to lose. Like, you're sure as hell not going to meet these connections sitting at home playing Call of Duty or watching Netflix. So why not?
Absolutely. So let's talk about how you managed to grow 300 units, over 300 units in 5 years, essentially. So also, not only that, you expanded, like you said, a lot of the different strategies. It's not just one strategy. You've done many. You've got multifamily. You're doing Airbnbs. You've got single families in your own portfolio. And you also mentioned to me that you have had a hotel in California, right? I think you're offloading that. But
yeah.
Getting into that space too. Like, so how is it that you were able to do that? Because there's a lot of investors out there, Sean, I'll be honest with you, they've been investing for 10 years and they don't pick up that traction. So what would you say is the recipe in order to pick up that traction and do more and build your portfolio and build it fast so that you can hit cruise control when you're ready to kind of slow down a little bit? How would you advise people to do that? How did you do it?
Networking. Talking about real estate as much as you humanly possibly can with everyone possible, and strategic partnerships. The way I was able to grow that portfolio is really from investors and other people's money. When I started and I liquidated my 401k to jump in on that first project, all of my money together was $78,000, which is a lot of money to people, but it's also in the real estate game, not a crazy amount of money. That was my nest egg that I started with. And in order to grow that, I realized that I can't do that. I could do this with all my own money. It's just going to take longer. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to raise money from investors and I had to learn how to do that. The biggest thing that recommendation I can give to people is, number one, like, if you want people to invest with you, they have to feel confident in you. They have to have trust. They have to feel like they know what you're doing. Everybody before, a lot of my investors are all over the place, right? They're old or air traffic controller friends and family, people that I've just literally met living in my building. One of my investors I met at Tomorrowland in Europe, and has a family office. You're going to meet people everywhere, but I think one of the keys is how are they going to know me as real estate Sean and not air traffic control Sean? And really the key for that is doing the social media stuff so that people can see behind the curtain and learn that you know what you're talking about and that you eat, sleep, and breathe real estate. Going to conferences. The real estate meetups are huge. I have several investors that have invested with me did so through the real estate meetups. Talking about my deals, taking them with me to check out my deals, teaching them what I'm doing. All of these things come together. And if you want to replicate what I did, follow the blueprint. I mean, I don't know how other people do it, but a lot of the people that I follow who I've read their books, et cetera, I followed the blueprint and it works. So I would say you've really got to market yourself so that people understand and trust you. That you, if they never hear you talking about real estate, why are they going to give you $50,000? So I think that that's huge for people to consider, and network your butt off. Every opportunity you get, if someone wants to take you out for coffee, if you're going to take somebody out for coffee, take all of those opportunities. And one of the biggest, another big thing that I like to recommend to people, I think real estate meetups are a great place to start. Even better if you start your own meetup. It will be small at first, but when you're the head of the meetup, people are going to come approach you and want to learn more about you. And you're forced to say hi to people that are showing up to your meetup for the first time. I found that to be very powerful. So that might be a long-winded response, but all of those things I think really come together.
Absolutely. But you know what? No, it's not just when you have your own meetup, you're not just forced to talk to people because they want to come and talk to the organizer. Everybody wants to talk to the boss, right? Mm-hmm. And know the boss, but it also forces you to be on your game and to go out there and learn the stuff that you need to learn in order to elevate yourself, because you're putting yourself in a position of needing to be that position of authority where you know all that. So by force of necessity, you need to go out there and learn as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that You're also, by teaching, you're kind of learning, right? They always say one of the best ways to like learn something even better is to teach it. So writing blog articles, all of these things, you're sometimes you might be writing a blog article on, you know, okay, what's everything I need to know about capitalization rates, or what's everything I need to know about investing in a market like San Diego? Well, you're going to be researching while you're writing the article. So you're learning more, you're writing it down, sharing it with people. All of these things I really feel like solidify your knowledge and help you learn more. I probably didn't expound enough on the fact that, yes, the mentorship was absolutely crucial. I mean, my God, if I didn't have that mentor with that experience, I definitely wouldn't be where I am today. I think mentors are huge, and I understand it's difficult to get a good one, but doing all of these things is also how you get that mentor. I mean, if I didn't start a podcast, invite my mentor to be on my podcast, tell him what I was doing, and him seeing him getting excited, they don't do mentorships with other people. They don't have a program. Mm-hmm. It was them liking what we're doing and wanting to give back, and us saying like, look, we don't want to do these programs. Is there any chance you guys would be interested in this? And sure enough, they were. And we got that one-on-one mentorship where they took us under their wing. So I think all of that stuff plays into it.
100%. And whether it's a mentorship or a coaching program, that is going to hold you accountable. Like the coaches and the mentors, what they do is they're like, yeah, you're guiding your North Star. They just, you know, they'll give you a course correction when you're getting off. They'll really make you question what path you're taking and why, and keep you on track. But the biggest thing I think is accountability, right? Hold you accountable to getting stuff done.
Yes, exactly. And it helps you avoid so many mistakes. I mean, mentorships is often going to cost you money. But if you spend whatever money you're spending usually on this coaching, on this mentorship, you're going to save many, many more times more money by not making mistakes that you're avoiding essentially with that mentorship. I strongly believe that. If I hadn't had a mentor and I was doing my first syndications, there's a much higher probability that they wouldn't have been such successful syndications. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And I think that goes unnoticed to people, because when you're looking at, and this is one of the conversations that I have a lot with students, is that don't look at it as spending money. You're not spending money, you're investing. This is investing. Mm-hmm. And your return is the speed of implementation. So you're going to be able to grow your portfolio a lot quicker and avoiding those mistakes, like you said. But because there's no tangible return on that investment, you're not seeing it as a percentage. You can't calculate it that way, the way you would if you bought an asset. I think it's really hard for people to understand that and see that. So, you know, I appreciate you bringing that up, because I think it's important for people to really understand that concept, that you do get a rate of return on your investment.
Absolutely. And I want to put it this way too. There's a great book, Who Not How. If you've never read it and you're listening to this, buy that book on Amazon and read it as soon as possible. Stop thinking of how am I going to raise all of this capital? Think, who can help me and teach me how to raise this capital? I have tons of coaches. I've had my mentor. I've had a capital raising coach that's shown me the proper way to market, sequence your emails, how to create an amazing pitch deck, how to really wow your investors and pull at their emotional strings to get them more excited about your deals. I had to pay for that. I have a business coach that helps me structure my business, keep me accountable. I already mentioned the mentorship. I've taken courses. I have a marketing company that I've hired to improve my marketing. I've joined tons of programs, and all of them have enormous value. And I think that's what the best businesses do. The best businesses either hire talent or hire organizations that can help them be more efficient and more successful. And I swear to God, every single one of those programs and coaches that I brought on my team have exponentially grown my business.
100%. And listen, I'm just going to put it out there. For those of you who are listening, you can absolutely buy books on, you know, how to properly structure an email sequence and incite some emotion, all of that. But when you hire somebody, like, listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to know how Sean got to 300 units in 5 years, it's because he hired people who made that learning curve a lot shorter. you can go out there and read about it. Then you got to learn how to implement it. And then you got life happening. So there's nobody holding you accountable. So you're just operating a lot slower. But when you hire a coach or a mentor, they're like, no, this is it. This is how you do it. Let's go. And then they give you a whole bunch of tools and resources and maybe some pre-written emails, some scripts for you to go with, because books will give you the concepts, but not necessarily dive deep into the weeds, right?
Exactly. Just like it's like going to college. Like, yeah, they're going to give you a textbook to read, but you can't. It's way harder to learn these concepts fully if you're just reading the book. There's still a professor that's got to answer questions. They have office hours. You could walk in and walk through problems with them. That's how you really learn. And yeah, you can buy the books, and that's definitely going to help. I've learned a ton of stuff from books, but having somebody that to go through it and review what you're putting out there and help you improve upon it and do these little improvements incrementally over time, that's how you grow. That's how you get big portfolios.
Yeah. And then the other thing too is that when you have a coaching team or somebody behind you, a mentor who's validating what you're doing, that you're on the right path, it makes it way easier to pull the trigger. So I think when people are on their own, so many times there's great deals in front of them, but because they're on their own, there's some self-doubt. And so they don't pull the trigger maybe when they should have. And, you know, it's a missed opportunity, right? And
Agreed.
Yeah, having that coach is definitely worthwhile. But I want to go through. I did take down some notes when you were going through. Like, these are the things that helped me escalate. This is one. I just want to expand on this because I think a lot of people don't really dive deep into really understanding how the knowledge. Yes, you can get the knowledge out there on YouTube and books and networking rooms and whatever. But when you have somebody behind you that's giving you exactly what you need when you need it so that you can go and implement, I mean, it is what is going to create that speed of implementation so you can create velocity in building your portfolio. But this is what you said, networking, it's absolutely key. I like 100% built my business on that. Market yourself. You always want to be selling yourself. Paula Sagan, one of my first mentors, he used to always say that, let people know what you're doing. Otherwise, they don't know how to be a part of your world, right? Building strategic partnerships. So onboarding those people, you got to leverage other people's time and expertise. Learn how to raise money. You can't buy real estate without money. So you need to learn that.
Right?
Teach your partners, teach your potential partners. That creates the trust. Create trust is what Sean said. And of course, share your story and your knowledge through the meetups and social media and any other way that you can. So that there is Sean's recipe on how he got to 300 units in 5 years, guys. Sounds simple, doesn't it, Sean?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the blueprint's there. I didn't make up any of this stuff. I'm not a genius that invented any of this stuff. I'm following a blueprint that others before me have put forward. And really, that's what's awesome about real estate. This isn't rocket science. The mathematics are really basic. I mean, we're talking addition, subtraction, multiplication, division in most cases. There's all of the methods for how to find great deals, raise capital, all of that stuff, the blueprints out there. You just have to be willing to put in the work and actually look at it.
Dang it. I'm so happy you said work, because that's where I was going. Sounds simple, but guys, you got to do the work. You have to do the work in educating yourself, meeting those people. You got to do the time. There's no way you can build a business and a massive successful portfolio without doing the work. So let's talk about that a little bit, Sean. So let's talk about maybe the challenges that you've encountered along the way when building that portfolio. So what were the hard parts? Like, what challenges did you come across that maybe you had to do a little bit of stumbling and might even have fallen down where you had to get back up?
There was a lot of them. I would say some of the biggest challenges early on in your business are undoubtedly going to be the fact that unless you have a lot of money to hire talented employees, you're going to be wearing a lot of hats. In other words, you're going to be doing a lot of work yourself. When we're talking about work, I mean, it's a lot of work. If you're raising money from investors, if you're aggressively building a successful real estate portfolio, there's so much that goes into it. Accounting and taxes, evaluating deals, underwriting deals, the marketing pieces, the podcast stuff. All of this stuff, each one of those things can take a lot of time. When I was starting, I was doing this while working 50 hours a week in air traffic control. I was in the break room in between sessions of work and traffic with a laptop working on work. And then I'd go home and work on work. So I want to make it clear that there is a lot of work to be done. This isn't easy in the sense that, like, yeah, you can get to a point where you're only working a couple of hours a week, but unless you have a ton of money to be hiring out employees and stuff, that road is a difficult road at first. And there was a lot of times where I really felt I was getting burned out, where I really felt like, man, I just don't seem to be getting the investors signing up and trickling in enough. What am I doing wrong? Should I go back to air traffic control just because I'm getting tired of this? I think as an entrepreneur, you're always going to have those moments. I think that there's going to be times where you feel like there's too much weight on your shoulders, but I promise you, if you persevere, if you stick with it and you don't give up, eventually that stuff starts to fade away. Eventually you will find some success. You'll be able to use some profits to hire out certain duties over time, bring on an assistant early, things like that. So I think that that was like a big roadblock for me, or something that I found difficult early on. The other thing that I felt that I thought was difficult for me in the early years was my social anxiety. What's required to build the investor database and going out, getting out of the house and going to these meetups and stuff. That wasn't easy for me. When I first started doing podcasting, I wasn't very good at it. I think I want to recommend people this too. Be okay sucking at first. Because you probably will. You get better with reps. I wasn't very good podcast host when I first got started. I wasn't good at talking in front of crowds or people. Didn't do a good job with my pitch decks and my investor communications and things like that. But I got better over time. I learned and I just kept improving. So I think those are two big things that I wanted to make sure I got out to people, is that, like, you're going to feel like you have a mountain on top of you, but that's what entrepreneurship is for most people. Obviously, if you've got a ton of money and you can hire six-figure employees left and right, hey, that's awesome.
Well, and you know what, guys, you can start with a VA. So it's not a six-figure employee, but they can take on some of that work. I mean, VAs are great for bookkeeping and data entry, even, right? So you scan your receipts, send them off, and they can do that for your accountant. So you're not doing that. You do have to leverage other people's time. Do you use VAs?
I use a ton of them. I have VAs that handle my podcast stuff. I even have VAs that do like news scrapes for me now. So in order to really keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on, they go on to CoStar, NMHC, National Multifamily Housing Council websites, Bloomberg, pull all of these different articles, have them summarized with ChatGPT in bullet point format, and then they're organized for me. Any graphs or charts are put in a certain spot. So twice a week, I'm able to go through and really understand everything that's going on without having to read every single article or separate that stuff myself. So that's just like one aspect, but I use them like everywhere in my business now.
I love that. We need to talk more about that, because I also have VAs, and they give me the news articles, and you're saying I have them summarize it. I'm like, dang it, why didn't I think of that? So I'm like still reading the articles. I am definitely doing the summaries, and I'm curious with the whole chart, right? I'm like, dang it, I didn't even think of that. So, and look, it just to validate your point, like, create a podcast, you're going to learn something when you have guests on and they're teaching you. So
it's
love
an awesome
that.
Bonus podcast. Yeah, I love it.
Totally.
That's actually how I learned how to do that, by the way, was another podcast guest that's like a whiz with automation and stuff like that. And he gave me more ideas just like this. And I incorporated them into my business. And again, just little improvements in efficiency over time.
Oh my God. Like, these small little things over time, hands down, is, and you know what, to your point, when you're building the business, again, the things that you said, the challenges is time. It's a lot of sweat and tears in the beginning. And then the self-doubt. I call it, if you Google the life of the entrepreneur, there's an image, go to the images in Google, and there's a graphic there, and the highs are high and the lows are lows. So like when you have a closing, you're like, woo, there's new property and you're about to start renovating. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you find out there's a foundation issue once you start renovation, or there's water issues. And all of a sudden, like the renovation that was going to be 40,000 is turning into 65,000. You don't have the money for it. Man, then you're like, why am I doing this? So the highs are high and the lows are lows. And you're like, what is going on? But it does tend to balance out over time. It will, like, the swings will start getting smaller and smaller as you start incorporating these little things to make your life easier, for sure.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
I wanted to say, because one of the things you said, like, you weren't really good at podcasting. And I heard another podcast guest on my show that we recently released. She said, you know, you got to be good with good enough. And that's how they run their business. They're like, you know what? You got to be good with good enough. Is it good enough? Good. I'm good with good enough. And that really helps that self-doubt, that perfectionism, and it just helps things to continue to move forward so you don't get stuck.
And I agree. And there's a great quote from Marcus Aurelius in his Meditations book, where he says, what's in the way becomes the way. And so Think of it, if you're listening to this podcast, like, you know, I don't really want to start my own podcast because I don't know if I'm going to be good. I don't know if people will listen. Well, that could be what's standing in the way of you meeting more investors. That could be what's standing in the way of you meeting your mentor. That's how I met mine. So whatever those thoughts are that you're having of that's getting in the way of you making those little improvements, make that become the way that you take that next step.
Well, and essentially the essence of that quote is that it becomes the way, and then the reason why you're not meeting people and you're judging them is because you're not getting out there, or they're judging you rather. You feel that they're judging you because you're not getting out there and you're not meeting people, which is validating what you're feeling. Like, I'm not going to do this because I can't. So it's kind of a, like, it's really like a catch 22, right? So
exactly.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying exactly. Sorry.
It's all good. So mindset is really critical when it comes to success. We're touching on it, but we're not really calling it out. So let me ask you this. What would you say was a turning point for you in getting your mindset right so that these thoughts didn't overtake you and slow you down or even just get you to quit? Because you have that self-doubt. So how did you work through that?
You know, let me think of the best way I could put this, because I think that the mindset shift for me that really started to change my life, and it's kind of funny, but this is the first thing that's coming to mind, is just I started to think to myself, look, man, like, you're in your mid-30s right now. If you're not going to go for this, if you're not going to, like, give it 100%, if you're just going to, like, tippy-toe around thinking that you're going to build a big portfolio, it's probably not going to happen. It's basically, for me, I'm not getting any younger. And I also looked at it as, you know what, if I'm unsuccessful and it doesn't work, if I'm not a good podcaster, if I'm not, you know, good at the marketing stuff or whatever the case may be, if I don't do a good job, you know, speaking in front of all these people as a guest at a real estate meetup, so what? Mm-hmm. Who cares? Like, they're going to care for like 5 seconds if they even notice, because most people aren't even going to notice that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, what's important? I ask myself, do I really want to be this person? Do I want to be the guy that has 1,000 multifamily units? Okay, what are those people doing? And replicate what they're doing. And so I just, you know, to put that into mindset, it's really like, I think asking myself that question of, do you really want to do this? All right, well then do what's required to reach your goals. And I would think back on, like, when I was in baseball, I was obsessed with baseball as a kid. My dad was trying to help me. And I remember he'd catch me playing video games or something. And he'd say, you said you want to get a scholarship for baseball. Is that going to get you a scholarship for baseball? All right, get out there and do 50 swings. Let's go practice fly balls. If you want to reach your dreams, then act like it. And I always think back on my dad telling me that. And so, you know, I'll catch myself doing something, you know, and obviously there's work-life balance, but I'd catch myself doing something and I'd say, is this going to help me reach my goals? All right. And I always think too that, you know, you can, like, not work as hard or whatever and reach your goals, but you're just extending the timeline to get to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the more intentional you are and the more willing you are to do what's required to get to that level, you shrink down that timeline.
For sure. Now, what do you tell, because you said you had, you know, you started burning out, because you can only go, like, there really is a timeline. Everybody has a timeline of how long they can go hard before they really start reaching that breaking point. So what do you tell somebody who's listening to the podcast who feels like they've been going hard and spinning their wheels in the mud and not really getting there? So what do you tell them? Because we can tell them to keep going harder, but eventually, like, you know, there's just, it's like running, just running and running, running and not knowing when, you know, the finish line is. You can't just run indefinitely forever. Your body is just going to give out. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what do you tell somebody who just feels like they're spinning their wheels in the mud?
That's a good question and a tough one. But what I would tell people is something that, and I don't know if this is the best answer, but one thing that I realized whenever I was like really struggling, and I would talk to other entrepreneurs that like were successful, I would say learn, read, listen, and talk to other people who have been through that, because I've never met anybody yet that stuck with it, kept busting their butt, that didn't ultimately reach their dreams and their goals. I have yet to find somebody that was like, yeah, man, I stayed after it for 10 years, just trying my real estate thing, and it never worked out. The people that persevered and stuck with it always seemed to be successful. I'm a big believer in that. I'm a big believer in hard work. I know that it can suck grinding, but just remember that you're doing this. This is a long game, okay? There's a lot of people you've heard on podcasts that got huge portfolios in like 2 years or 5 years. That's not the norm, though. And it's possible, but stick with it, because at the end of the day, if you don't stick with it now, you may never reach your goals. So I don't know if that's the best answer, but that's what comes to mind, is that when I was really struggling, I would talk to other entrepreneurs about it, other people that have been where I was before, or I would listen to them, or I'd read more books about entrepreneurship. That's part of the journey for a lot of people. And I think you need to accept that, and you're going to end up looking back on it and going, man, I'm really glad that I didn't give up, because that's why most businesses fail. Most podcasts don't make it past like what, the 20th episode or something crazy like that?
Less than that, 13.
Yeah, I think it's even less than that.
Yep.
And it's because people give up. They don't see, they don't get the gratification soon enough, and they think, screw it, I'm just going to quit. Don't be those people, because the ones that survive to 100 episodes are in the top 2% of podcasts, and very likely are going to be pretty successful. So that's kind of a long-winded response, but.
Well, that's great to know that I'm in the top 2%, because we're over 100. I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh man, you might even be higher. You might be like top 1%.
Who knows? Who knows? I should probably take a look at that. But you know what? Coming back to what you were talking about, here's the thing. I fully agree with you. I've always said there's only one way to fail, and that's to quit. There's only one way to fail, and that's to quit. And essentially, that's what you're saying. And I, you know, we talked before the show, and I love how like we're just so in alignment with this. And that's what high level people, they understand these concepts. And that's what you use as, you know, a beacon to keep you on task when things are getting really hard. Right. And so the other thing is too, which kind of made me, as you were talking, made me think of, you know, what's the definition of insanity? It's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So if you break the pattern and do something different, maybe if you're spinning your wheels in the mud, you know, you just got to do something different. So you got to break that pattern. So I love that. I love that.
Thank you. I agree 100%.
Yeah. So now I want to celebrate with you. You've got 30 new contracts, 30 new units under contract. Woo, woo. So that's so much fun. Let's go. So this one is a little bit different, because now you're moving. Now this is something, the journey of the real estate investor. Typically you start with single family. You started a multi and went backwards to singles, but typically you start multifamily, then you go up to, or single family, you go up to multifamily, and then you start getting more creative. And really the entrepreneurs, it's entrepreneurial ADD. You just want to keep learning and doing something different. And now these 100%. 30 units, tell me about that, because that's kind of different. It's more in land development, right? Community.
Yeah. So I'm a big believer that, you know, it's great to be a master at one strategy. I won't argue that. But I would also argue that it's not always the best time to implement a certain strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So house flipping is a very profitable business, but it might not be the best strategy 365 days out of the year, every single year, infinitely, okay? There's going to be times where maybe you've got to do something else, or like I say, take what the defense is giving you. So we were finding that the value-add multifamily was becoming so competitive that it was becoming increasingly difficult for our deals to pencil. It was like finding a needle in a haystack. So what we started to do was just talk with more people that were being successful with other strategies and things. And what we ultimately landed on was this strategy in San Diego of infill development and new density. And I'll try and say this as quickly as possible. San Diego is unique because it has some of the least amount of buildable land in the country. There's mountains to the east, Pacific Ocean to the west, Mexico to the south, and Camp Pendleton military base to the north. All of the flat land has been built on. But the city is in crisis with their housing. On average, 17 renters are competing for the same apartment. It's the most competitive rental market in California. It's nuts here. So the city implemented new programs. One of them is called the Bonus ADU program. Another one's called the Complete Communities program. What they will essentially let you do is there's certain areas of the city where if there is a multifamily zoned lot that has a single family home sitting on it, you can buy that lot and build a multifamily, okay? And they'll give you a bonus density. So they'll increase the allotted density you're allowed to put there. In exchange for that, they make you mark a couple of the units as affordable to where the people are income restricted in order to qualify for that apartment. So for example, we have a 30-unit project very close to the beach. It's 0.7 miles to the beach and one of San Diego's most premier beach communities. There's two lots sitting side by side for sale at the same time. We're able to buy those lots, demo down the house, combine the lots into one, and build a 30-unit apartment complex in its place. And in addition to that, we're able to get our permits approved a lot faster because they need housing so bad that if you submit your permits through these programs, you're going to get them faster than if you bought a vacant plot of land and were just like, I'm just going to build a traditional multifamily. So that's the best way I can explain succinctly what these programs are. And we saw an enormous amount of opportunity. And I'll just give you another example. I'm sorry. I know I talk a lot sometimes, but
it's all good. No, keep rolling.
Pacific Beach. Where this project is going to be. Okay. One of the most competitive rental markets where most of the nightlife and stuff is. If you pull it up on Zillow right now, Pacific Beach, San Diego, and you search for two-bedroom apartments, I think I checked yesterday, there was 96 two-bedroom apartments available. If you search for two-bedroom apartments with in-unit washer and dryer, that jumps down to like 30. If you search for two-bedroom apartments that have in-unit washer and dryer and AC, it goes down to like 10. If you search for ones that have all of that plus parking, it goes down to 3. If you search for two bedrooms that have all of that that were built within the past year, there's 0 available. So that kind of scarcity and the number of people that want a nice newer apartment in these beach communities was extremely attractive to us. It allows us to charge a lot higher in rent and be really profitable. So that's why we really love these programs.
No, I love that. And I think especially in today's volatile market, it's important to capitalize on the city incentives and the programs that are offered by the city in order to make numbers work and to be able to really do a strategy that's going to be successful, right?
Yeah, exactly. The city, you know, they don't really have options to build a lot of their housing, so they have to increase density. And if you think about it, like, yeah, if at the very least, the lots that are zoned multifamily, we need multifamily on them to provide more housing. I mean, these government programs are oftentimes aren't around for a long time either. So I wrote an ebook on this. It's free, by the way, if anybody ever wants to read it. It's on my website, investorsean.com. I call it California Gold because I call it the new California Gold Rush. There is only so many lots that will qualify for this that make sense and that pencil. But like a prospector looking for gold, if you find one and you could put a deal together, you can make a lot of money. And so I think this is one of the most profitable strategies right now that I can do. And that's why I've made that pivot.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening right now and you want an opportunity to maybe work with Sean, go out there, find these lots, find a way to put the deal together, then call Sean and ask him to partner with you on this.
That's the best advice anyone's ever given on this show so far today. So I agree with that.
I'm telling you. See, opportunity. You got to be able to find opportunities, right? So you don't need money in order to go out there and build a portfolio and buy that 30-unit building or 32-unit, which was your first one. You just got to be able to identify the opportunity like I just did.
Yes.
And put it together. So let's see how many people call you, Sean, and say they got a deal they need you to look at.
I hope a ton of them. I hope all you guys call me, because these are like finding, it's not easy to find these deals, but if you find them, give me a call.
Yep, for sure. And so with that, if you want to connect with Sean, he does have an Instagram handle. He's building his following there. Again, coming back to time, all these different things require time. Social media is just an added layer of business now where it requires a lot of time. So make sure you send some love to Sean. It's Sean.DeMartel. So we'll have that in the show notes. Find him there. Give him some love. Follow him. And if you want to send him a DM, maybe find a way to work with him. Or if you find those properties that you can put an assembly together so you can build a multifamily, shoot him a text. Go to investorsean.com, get that free ebook, learn about the strategy that he's doing right now in San Diego. Maybe there's other markets that have similar programs. So if you learn about the strategy, guys, I'm going to tell you right now, when you're learning a strategy in a certain market, don't just say, oh, that's only in San Diego, because other markets will follow. If you learn the foundation, the fundamentals of a strategy, a lot of times you can apply it elsewhere. So you might be able to do this in your own backyard. So go take advantage of that free ebook. And was there any last final words, Sean, that you want to share with the audience?
No, I just want to thank you so much for letting me come on your show. You're a really awesome podcast host, by the way. I love your energy. You ask really awesome questions. So if you guys found this podcast and you're listening, I think you found one of the better real estate podcasts. So thank you so much, Danielle. I appreciate it.
Oh, that is like super sweet. I didn't even pay him for that. So thank you for that. Yeah. And don't forget to go rate the show, rate the show too. So that always helps us with our, getting this great information out there to the rest of the audience. So, Sean, it's been a pleasure having you on. I knew you were going to be an awesome guest and I appreciate you taking the time. And if ever you come up to Toronto, I do have a networking group up here. And so would love to have you on our stage up here. So if ever you come up here, maybe not during
the
winter.
Summer, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going up there when it's -20°C.
Yeah, no, probably not a good idea. You might not handle it very well, but would love to have you up in the spring, the fall, when we have the events going on. Summertime, we take a break, most networks do, real estate networks. But yeah, we're here for you. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
So this is Danielle Chason signing off for the Let's Get Real Estate podcast, where I bring to you real people doing real estate. Bye for now.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast and congratulations on improving your education real estate.
Please leave a review only if you felt we provided value, as it would really help us if you would leave a 5-star review so that we can help reach a broader audience.
And don't forget to comment what you enjoyed and tell us what you are looking to learn more about.
As always, thanks for your support and we'll see you on the next episode.